We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. We're part of the Blue Wire Network. I am Ricky O'Donnell. As always, I'm here with Jason Pat. And Jason, I'm trying to manufacture some excitement in my voice about the Chicago Bulls, despite the fact that this team just isn't that exciting. But the end of the season is here. The Bulls have six games left, Jason. Three of them are against the Knicks. They need to win two of them for us to hit our over-under bet. And they are coming off what was a pretty crucial loss to the Atlanta Hawks on Monday night. While you were watching Caitlin Clark in Iowa take out the LSU Tigers, or perhaps you were watching UConn versus USC in the Women's Elite Eight, the Bulls lost a game to the Hawks 113-101. The Bulls are now a half game ahead of the Hawks for the number 9 seed in the Eastern Conference playoff race. The Bulls are either going to be number 9 or number 10. They have the tiebreaker against Atlanta because they beat Atlanta 2 out of 3 times this year. They get smoked yesterday, but they were on a back-to-back, coming off an emotional win over the Minnesota Timberwolves the night before when the Bulls hit the Wolves with a fantastic run at the end of the game. There was a Vooch volleyball set pass to the corner for Alex Caruso to hit a three. There was a DeRozan three in crunch time. Kobe White hit a three in crunch time. And the Bulls were able to pull out a win on the road against one of the better teams in the NBA in Minnesota. Whatever magic they had in that closing stretch did not translate to a home game against the Hawks on Monday night. So the Bulls dropped that game. They sit at 36-40 on the year. And Jace, they are off until Friday when they host the Knicks at the United Center. They have something like 6 games in 10 days after this sort of bizarre stretch of 3 days off. So it's going to be a furious rally until the play-in tournament. Again, the Bulls are playing the Hawks in the 9-10. What is still up for grabs is the ticket gate revenue of where that game will be hosted. Will it be in Chicago? Will it be in Atlanta? The Bulls have the inside track for that game still with the tiebreaker over the Hawks. DeMar DeRozan was asked after the game yesterday if, you know, since they clinched the play-in, does he want to rest? Nope. DeMar said, you know, despite the fact that he's leading the NBA in total minutes in year 15, he wants to be out there.
He just wants to hoop.
Jace, I almost wonder if the Bulls told DeMar they'll give him a third year in contract extensions this summer if they make the playoffs. DeMar is playing like a man possessed right now. It's almost like he has a massive financial incentive on the line to close this season. We know DeMar is a free agent after the year. The Bulls, they are, you know, as we've been saying, meandering towards the finish. They lose to the Washington Wizards. They blow out the Pacers. They lose to the Nets, who suck. They somehow come back and win another clutch game against the Wolves. Then they lose to the Hawks, the team that they really could have needed to beat just to solidify the number nine seed. Man, I hate that they have three of their final six games left against the Knicks, because the Knicks are playing some good ball right now. Jace, it's all happening. How are you feeling?
And the last week was downright hilarious of Bulls basketball. As you mentioned, that little the last five games here, you lose to the Wizards, who are a joke. One of the worst teams in the NBA, and that's at home as well. That was one of the few clutch games they've actually lost, was that one. They come back and they beat the Pacers by 26. Javonte Green, I believe that was his first game back with the Bulls, and he was like a plus 25 or 26 or something like that. Five Javontes out there. It was great. The Bulls, dominant performance against a Pacers team that they've beaten a couple times, beaten three times actually this year. The Pacers were on the end of a long road trip, clearly a mailed-in performance that they had. And then the Bulls, after that one, as you mentioned, they go to Brooklyn and they give up 25 three-pointers to the Nets. I believe that is the second time this season the Bulls have given up 25 threes. I believe that a franchise record for the Nets. Twice this season, the Nets stink. I tweeted at halftime, like, oh man, like, you know, this Nets team, like, the Nets got out to a hot start. Bulls came back. I was like, oh, Bulls gonna win this game. Like, the Nets stink. Mikal Bridges, that the come down's been rough. And then he goes out and hits a million threes in the second half. They hit like 18 threes in the second half out of their 25 threes. And yeah, they get smoked by a terrible Nets team. The Bulls have lost three times in Nets this year. And then the Timberwolves game. I figured, all right, they lose that Nets game, like, they're going to get their ass beat by the Timberwolves. Timberwolves out for some revenge after the Bulls' emotional comeback victory in Chicago earlier this year, where they came back from down 23 in the second half. And then in this game, the Bulls kind of hit them in the mouth. They played really well, but then Timberwolves made a run in the fourth quarter. They took a three-point lead down the stretch. It was like, all right, the Bulls are going to peter out here. The Timberwolves have the league's best defense. They're choking the Bulls' offense out. This thing is a wrap. What happens, though, of course, is the Bulls' clutch magic, which is almost unbeatable, takes over. The Timberwolves scored 2 points in the last 5 minutes. Their offense just completely went into the tank. A lot of bad Anthony Edwards, a lot of bad Rudy Gobert down the stretch. And you mentioned the three-point barrage. Caruso went 7 of 8 from three in that game. Kobe hit the final dagger. DeMar hit a three, and they just completely dominated clutch time, which has been a theme, and we'll talk about that a bit more later again. You beat the Timberwolves. Was anybody surprised that they got smoked by the Hawks last night? Absolutely not. That's what the Bulls are at this point. Big talking point after the Timberwolves game was like, our guy Will Gottlieb at CHGO wrote about, like, all the article, wrote about his game column was basically like the Bulls' quest for consistency. And he got a quote from DeMar. And we've obviously talked about it. That's been a big talking about the Bulls. They lose this game. And they get this big win and they go out and they lose these shitty teams. It's like, well, that's what a team that's super mediocre does. But we had this quote from DeMar, which was just, I kind of chuckled that. I mean, obviously, I don't hate like DeMar for saying it. It's funny that he said it, but I mean, he's a player. He's not going to come out and say, you know, we just suck. But here's the quote. We know our capabilities. We know we could beat anybody. So when we lose the games or Twitter goes crazy on us and says we're the most confusing team, it's definitely frustrating because that's not us. When we perform like we did Sunday night, that's who we are. It's all about being consistent. It was funny that he mentioned Twitter people going crazy, but I mean, the Bulls are not inconsistent. The Bulls are very consistently a mediocre basketball team, which we saw over the last week. They have oscillated from dog shit to great wins. And that's kind of what mediocre teams do. They're not inconsistent at all. They're very consistent in being mediocre. If you look at the last, basically the entirety of the Arturis Karnišovas era, if you look at like their net rating over the last 4 years, it's basically something like, I looked this up and I can't remember, but they're basically three of the 4 years that are like right around 20th in net rating. And last year they were 13th on the back of their elite defense. They just had a bad record under 500 because they were terrible in the clutch. This year, they're a bad team that is elite in the clutch, and that's why they're 36-40. They could easily, again, they could be 10 to 12 games under 500 now if they weren't just pulling games out of their ass left and right. But ultimately, this is a team that's mediocre. They've been mediocre basically the entire Karnišovas era outside of the start of the 21-22 season when they had Lonzo Ball, and for a little bit after that when DeMar was doing his stuff. And then after that, the rest of that season, they got their ass beat the last quarter of the year, and they got their ass beat by the Bucks. But this is a very consistent team. They're consistent at being mediocre because it's the same team. We're talking about basically the same team the last 3 years. And then the year before that was when they traded for Vooch. So, like, it's no surprise that we see the same thing happening over and over because that's what this team is. It's the same core of guys. There's obviously some injuries this year, but it's basically the same thing, and we keep seeing the same results. They have some great games. They look great. They can beat anybody. They have some awful games where they look like shit, and they lose to the dregs of the league. And that's just kind of where we're at, meandering to this finish line where they're going to be in the 9-10 game. I meant to look this up, and it would have taken probably too much time, but they've been in the 9 seed for, what, 2 or 3 months? They have not moved out of this 9 spot for a long time. And I had this whole long Twitter thread about just like how they've oscillated between 4 games under and 1 game under for literally like 2 months now. They never get good enough to get to 500, but they never get bad enough to fall 5 games under or worse. They are something like 10-0 in the last 10 games they've played when they've dropped a 4 under. The next game after that, they've won 10 games in a row. And that includes some of the, like, both Timberwolves games. It includes that Kings comeback. A couple of the, like, I think they beat the Pelicans like that, that Cavs 2-2 overtime game. Every time it looks like they're going to go to 5 games under 500, they pull some insane win out of their ass. So the New York Knicks, you guys are going down on Friday because you can't beat the best team in the league, the 4 under 500 Chicago Bulls. The Knicks will be playing on the second of a back-to-back. So put your money on the Bulls right now, because they're going to pull that game out of their ass somehow in clutch time. But ultimately, again, yeah, 9-10 game, it's happening. Where it's happening, we'll see. It's now at least somewhat interesting. I do still think the Bulls will end up 9. The Hawks have some tough games left, and the Bulls do have the tiebreaker, so that I think might be the final thing. But I guess if the Bulls finish, you're like 2-4. They play the Knicks 3 times. They play the Magic on the road. They do play the Wizards and Pistons each. But that is a back-to-back, and maybe the Bulls will rest guys one of those games, and maybe they choke on it like they have against both teams this year. So, ninth seed, not safe. Like I said, I still think they'll get it. But, I mean, ultimately, who cares? It's like, whatever. If they'll beat the Hawks in the play-in game, then they'll play either Philly or Miami or Indiana. It's basically, I think the 3 most realistic options right now. I mean, it's kind of tight in the Eastern Conference with those that other group kind of ahead. With all those teams are just kind of just battling for those spots. But yeah, we know how this is going to end. The Bulls are just kind of doing their thing towards the end of the season where they go back and forth between looking great and looking like crap. Was there a mediocre team playing mediocre basketball?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top 3 things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jace, I pulled up the standings by day while you were on that wonderful rant.
Oh, perfect.
And I can tell you that the Bulls have been in the 9 seed since January 8th.
There we go.
Nearly 40 games of NBA basketball, the Bulls have been stapled to the number 9 seed. You know it is going to break Jerry Reinsdorf's 88-year-old heart if they miss out on the gate revenue for that home play-in game. That's all this team cares about. That's all they're driving towards. So it would be funny if they blew it. I'm just going to say that. Jace, Vooch. Let's talk about Vooch because...
Do we have to...
Pretty terrible lately. Against the Hawks yesterday, in 31 minutes, only takes 7 shots, only scores 5 points. It was kind of reminiscent of a game against the Wizards when he only took 5 shots in 30 minutes. That happened last week. And Billy Donovan seemed to be alluding to something after the game that Vooch didn't shoot because he was mad at the guards for not getting him the ball enough. Vooch has such an overinflated ego. It's ridiculous. The Bulls continue to be better with Andre Drummond on the court.
Yeah.
I think we talked about this in the last episode.
We did.
Drummond's in many of their best lineups. So to me, if the Bulls have any chance of like winning 2 games in the play-in tournament, it is going to come down to Vucevic hitting several three-pointers in those games. If Vooch goes 2 of 5 from 3 every game, you know, he's a much better player than what he is doing now, where he's just a brutally inefficient shooter. Is there any hope for Vooch? Do you see them, when the game is really on the line, going with Drummond over Vooch? Where are you at the Bulls' big man rotation right now?
I mean, Drummond has been great, too. I mean, he was great last night. I mean, he's just gobbling up points and rebounds, and his just per, like, 36 or whatever, his raid stats are just, like, insane. Obviously, that doesn't always translate to like overall effectiveness, but like Vooch isn't being effective at all. I mean, if we hear, I'm going to tell you right now the on court, like net ratings, on off stuff. This can obviously be very noisy, but since the All Star break, the Bulls are -7.7 points per 100 possessions with Nikola Vucevic on the court in his 706 minutes. That is basically the worst on the Torrey Craig's actually worse, but out of them, whatever, the starters, consistent starters, Vooch, the worst. Kind of the starters have actually kind of gotten smoked in general. Like, it's all kind of bad. Like, Kobe's numbers aren't great there either. Io's aren't good either. DeMar is actually above 0 because DeMar often plays with these bench units with Andre Drummond and some of these other guys. Off the court, when Vooch is off the court in 317 minutes, the Bulls have outscored their opponents by 9.8 points per 100 possessions. Andre Drummond's a plus 3.1 at this time. So, like, the Bulls stink with Vooch on the court. They have stunk with since the All-Star break. They've been really bad with him on the court, and they've been better with him on the bench. Again, there's noise there. Drummond's going against bench units more. Vooch is going against starters more. But, like, the Bulls starting unit, it's getting their ass kicked on a regular basis. The bench comes in and often kind of stabilizes or makes comebacks. And Vooch just isn't very good. He puts up his numbers. The defense is awful with them in the court here. The Bulls have a 119 defensive rating with Vooch on the court since the All-Star break. That's absolutely disgusting. That's pathetic. And we just know, like, the Bulls defensive scheme is like kind of built around, like, well, you know, like, Vooch can't really protect the rim. So, like, they make it a point to give up three-pointers. They don't give up that many shots at the rim because or in the paint. They do have good guards at like keeping them out of the paint, but they give up a lot of like rotations, three-pointers. They give up the most three-pointers in the league. Well, our guy Will Gottlieb again wrote a column about the Bulls and their three-point defense and how they give up so many three-pointers. It's almost like 40 a game, I think, and they gave up they allow about 40 attempts per game, and they give up, I think, their percentage allowed is like right in the middle of the pack. That's often kind of random and variance, and we've seen that in these last few games. But the Bulls give up a lot of three-pointers, and the Hawks took advantage of that. Vit Krejci, 6 of 6 from 3. I believe the Hawks had 18 or 19 threes. Mentioned the Nets hit 25 on them the other day. The Bulls give up a lot of open threes, and that's just kind of how their defense is built, partly because of Nikola Vucevic and his shortcomings. So, like, Their defense stinks, except in the clutch. They have the best clutch, basically the best clutch defense in the NBA because reasons, I don't know. Alex Caruso, basically him. I'll give chalk up all the credit to him. I mean, Vucevic isn't very good. This is, like I said, he puts up his numbers, he gets his double-double still, and like you can kind of fool people into thinking that he's like still good because of it, but he's just not. He's an empty stats guy at this point. Like, so like, is there hope for him? I don't know. Like, he could still has the occasional big game where his like vintage self comes out. So like maybe he does that in the play-in and oh, look at Vooch, he's so great. But like overall, like he has not been effective. His 3-point shooting is a train wreck this season. His 3-point shooting was a big reason why it was like exciting that they got him. The year that they traded for him, which again was like a COVID no fan year, he was shooting like 40%+ from three with the Magic. And like, oh, we got this 7-footer, we can score inside, he can shoot 40% from three. Like that's a huge deal. The 3-point shooting going just like makes him so much less effective, hurts the offense, and the defense is just bad with him out there. So like, it's not good, Ricky.
It's not good, Jace, but it's something the Bulls are stuck with for the next 2 seasons.
And you ask like, will they play like Drummond over Vooch on the stretch? I doubt it. I feel like Vooch, unless he's going like real bad and like Drummond's had like a dominant game, in that case, maybe they'll go to the two big lineup, which they did yesterday trying to get back into the game. They've had some success, like depending on matchups when they've gone to that. Maybe they try that because Patrick Williams is hurt. They don't really have many power forwards. Torrey Craig's has not been very effective. Javonte is obviously a 10-day guy. It sounds like they're going to try to bring Javonte back, but he's still maybe 6'4". He's not big. They play Caruso a lot at power forward. So maybe they would go to the two big lineup down the stretch if they need to do it.
Jace, a couple good articles on the Bulls over the last 24 hours. One from Will Gottlieb at CHGO, one from Darnell Mayberry at The Athletic, talking about the Bulls' tendency to get slaughtered from the three-point line. I checked the numbers just now. The Bulls are down to 27th in three-point rate on the season. They were dead last, number 30, each of the last 2 years before this season. It was a big point of emphasis in their little training camp bonding trip to Nashville. The Bulls were going to get to the paint more. They were going to kick out and generate more three-pointers. And it really hasn't happened. I do think that for some of the year, they were like 20th in three-point rate, but it's falling back down again as this team just continues to sort of wear down the stretch. The Bulls also give up the most three-point attempts in the league. That's by design. That's not a mistake. The Bulls want to protect the paint and then scramble out to shooters. And like last night against the Hawks, you get burned by a role player who goes 6-for-6 from deep, and that's it. And if that happens in the first round of the play-in tournament, their season will be over, and Arturis Karnišovas is going to have to get really creative to tell us about how good he is, because this team will have finished with a worse record than last year and will not have a playoff appearance to show for it. So it all plays into this fact that, or this sense that, it does feel like in a one-game scenario, the Bulls maybe can compete with just anyone. They can also lose to absolutely anyone.
Yep.
And in reality, is that a good place to be in?
No.
It's really not. It's really not a good place to be in. And Jace, as much as the Bulls want to talk about how much they compete against the top teams in the league, their record versus teams 500 and above is 17-31 when they're playing a team above 500. Below 500, 19-9. Now, somehow, three of those losses are to the Nets. They just lost one to the Wizards. But in general, the Bulls have been very good at beating the crappy teams. They haven't been that good at beating the good teams, but they've done it occasionally. This has been a year in the NBA where there's so many teams that are, you know, going to finish in the 40s for wins. The Bulls probably won't be in that mix unless they win four of their final six games. But it feels like, you know, a lot of the league is above 500 this year, and then just some truly awful teams at the bottom of the standings, the Pistons, the Wizards, the Spurs, the Hornets, for sure. So I just can't get over the fact that Karnišovas is so satisfied with a team that just has like a coin flip chance in every single game that is building for nothing.
Well, I mean, they've gotten their ass beat in their share of games lately. I mean, the Mavericks, they got absolutely smoked. The Nets, they got smoked. Last night, they got smoked. Like, yeah, they've won a few nice games. But again, every team does that. Besides, like, the worst teams. And even them, they sometimes beat good teams, too. Like,
the Spurs just beat the Knicks.
The Atlanta Hawks just beat the Boston Celtics twice in a row. Like, that shit happens, especially in Mickey Mouse March coming down the stretch here. Like, it happens. Like, the Bulls have, they've beaten the Timberwolves twice, they beat the Pelicans twice, but then, as you said, 17-31 against teams over 500. It's not good enough. And like, he's going to play, AK's probably will, depending, we'll see how things end here and how their final record is, but he will almost certainly point to their record since Zach's initial injury, and they were 5-14. Like, the assuming they don't go like 0-6 here to close the year, like, they're gonna be, they are 31-26 right now since Zach's initial injury. But if you look closer, they are 31-26 with a net rating that is negative and is still 20th in the league. That's not it. That's, they're like the most mid team. They are 31-26 in Zach's initial injury because they are 22-10 in clutch games. They have pulled so many games out of their ass. And again, they deserve some credit for doing it. They deserve credit for being in some of these games. I will give them that much. But again, that you cannot rely and point to a record like, oh, like, look how good we were when your net rating is 20th. You're still like a bottom 10 team in terms of overall net rating over that stretch. Like, that's not going to translate to anything. Like, you can say, oh, you know, we learned how to win and we won all these clutch games. Man, it's like DeMar DeRozan hit a bunch of crazy shots and teams bricked. Like, I've been really diving into these clutch stats, and it's just absolutely insane. Like, the next one is more insane than the next. They're 8-2 in clutch games since the All-Star break. Teams are shooting 32% against them. Is that some of that good defense? Yes, it is. Alex Caruso is a fucking monster, and he was a monster in the Timberwolves game down the stretch. But the Timberwolves also, again, they went 0-0. They didn't score one clutch point against the Bulls that game. They scored 2 points in the last 5 minutes. Is that all good defense? No. And teams have just been they've missed a ton of shots. The Bulls give up a ton of threes in clutch time too, and teams just don't make them. And again, that's kind of by design. But a lot of this is just variant. A lot of the clutch stuff is absolute luck and variance. Some of it, again, DeMar is awesome in clutch time. Kobe's been pretty good. Alex Caruso is a monster defensively, but the Bulls are not a good defensive team this year, and they've been like insanely elite in the clutch. I mean, that doesn't really track. There's just like so much outlier stuff that has happened in the clutch for them this season where they're bad overall and all these other minutes, and then crunch time comes into like the second best team in clutch time besides the Denver Nuggets, who are the defending champs and absolutely just like lock in clutch time and kill everybody. Like, you can't rely on that moving forward. And you can't like be like, oh, we'll spin like, oh, well, we were 31-26. Well, overall, like, your team was still mediocre. Like, and it's not going to get better. Like, DeMar's getting another year older, Vooch another year older. Like, I know like Kobe still has some growth and we'll see about some of these other young guys, but hopefully fans will see I'm assuming he is going to go to that. Well, like, well, look at how well we played and how we bounced back after Zach got hurt. And I think to a degree it's true with some points, but like overall as a team to be like, if you use that as a point to be satisfied with who the roster's at and there's like no changes made, like, it's just a mistake. And that's idiotic because you look behind the hood, behind these numbers, behind that record, and there's just so much stuff that is red flags just and alarm bells ringing about how like that 31-26 could easily be 26-31 since Zach got hurt. But they've just pulled out so many games in such insane fashion that, I mean, you look at all the other teams that have like great clutch records, they're all teams over 500 in the playoffs. The Bulls have an insane clutch record and they're under 500. That's hilarious. Like, it's just such an outlier. It doesn't make any sense. And it points to a team that's just not, they're just not good enough. Like, they have this clutch record and they're still bad. Or not bad. They're not bad. They're mid. So like, to be that good in the clutch, but then to still be so mediocre overall, it's like, you're a mediocre team that's gotten pretty lucky and fortunate in so many of these close games.
Well said, Jace. I think you crushed it there. I appreciate you persevering through your Illini sadness to give us all of these deep dive Bulls stats, because I got a stat for you. Illinois got hit with a 30-0 run right on that end of their season. I think they won the rest of the minutes in that game, so congrats to Illinois for that one. But that game was not very close.
It was close for 19 minutes.
It was. It was pretty close for a little bit. I will see UConn up close because I'm going to cover the Final Four. I'm leaving on Thursday. I will be at the men's Final Four in Phoenix.
Is anybody beating UConn? You think it's going to happen? Or are they repeating?
I don't think so. I certainly don't think so, but I am hoping for a UConn-Purdue final. That could be billed as perhaps Godzilla versus King Kong 2. Just let those two giants in the middle battle it out, Zach Edey versus Donovan Clingan. What that game would come down to is how many minutes can Donovan Clingan play? He's only played 47% of available minutes this year for the Huskies. Zach Edey just played an entire Elite Eight game. He sat for 33 seconds. Scored 40 points. He had like 17 rebounds or something. Totally dominant. I wrote a big thing on Edey at SB Nation. You can check that out in his translation to the NBA if you want to. I wrote a column on Kim Mulkey's bogus game plan to defend Caitlin Clark and the Iowa Hawkeyes. And then I wrote a breakdown of the McDonald's All-American roster after I grinded the tape on the All-American scrimmage. One of my favorite games to watch every year. I could not be there in person this year because it's in Houston. It is oftentimes in Chicago, but the scrimmage is always a lot more competitive than the game itself, which tends to take on an all-star game feel. So I check that out. I always think that's the first really good look at the next year's draft class, that scrimmage. So I got some 2025 NBA draft takes already brewing. Will the Bulls have a pick in that draft? Only if they are in the top 10. Because otherwise, that pick is going to the San Antonio Spurs for the DeMar DeRozan trade. A lot happening in the basketball world right now, Jace. The Bulls are the least interesting of any of that. But, you know, they're doing it. And we're building to the ultimate crescendo of the play-in against the Atlanta Hawks. So get your popcorn ready.
Let's go. I said this on Twitter the other day. You know what actually would make the bowl season a little more interesting is if the original play-in tournament rules were still in effect. Because right now, the Bulls would be half a game behind like the breakoff point where you had to be four games or fewer, close to eight. Otherwise, you would not qualify for the play-in tournament. The Bulls are 4.5 games behind the eighth-seeded Philadelphia 76ers. So if the Bulls finish like five games back of them, them and the Hawks, like whatever, both that, say the Bulls and the Hawks both finished five games back. No, 9-10, you're out. We got our eight. We're good. They should go back to that because we don't need these bum ass 9-10 teams or 10. Like if the Bulls were like, say the Bulls were in within four, but the Hawks were not. Get the Hawks out of here. The Bulls can play the Sixers for the eighth seed or whoever ends up at the eighth seed. And then we kind of go that route. That's kind of what they did that first play-in tournament. But of course, with the money involved, they're not going to get rid of the 9-10 game, but they really should because no one needs the four games under 500 teams that are five, six games back of the eight. We don't need those teams involved. Get them out.
Jason, is Lakers-Warriors in the 9-10 game not going to be like the biggest ratings game of the NBA season?
But aren't they close enough to eight where it would, where it would matter? And like, I mean, those teams are over 500, like, I'm pretty sure they're a couple games behind the eights. And again, there would be this cutoff. Like you have to be four games behind the eight, four or five games, whatever it is. You want to make it behind the eight seeds. Like right now, the Bulls and Hawks would be like right behind it. Like they could still qualify, but you just, if you're like five games out of the eight seed, you should not get a chance to freaking have to get in and take a spot after all this time. Like that's just garbage. It rewards garbage, rewards mediocrity, and it rewards AK trying to remember when AK at the trade deadline said like, oh, well, we're like three games out of the sixth seed. And he lied about that. He was wrong. They're now like seven games out of the sixth seed. So like that's gone. They've gone backwards there. So that's backfired. Brutal stuff. Yeah. Bulls are the least interesting out of all these games. A lot of great basketball going around. That's not the Chicago Bulls. Obviously, if you still want to live and die by every Chicago Bulls minute, we'll not tell you not to do that. Diehard Bulls fans, I salute you. Go watch the Bulls, but there's so much other better basketball to watch. Final Four, both men's and women's, great stuff. The games last night were awesome. Lived up to the hype, both women's games. Great stuff there. And yeah, the men's Final Four. Illinois did not expect them to beat Connecticut and did not expect a 30-0 run. Klingon was just, I mean, completely took that game over. We did talk about him and Edey a little last pod real quick. I can't remember if we did mention this. Like, who would you... Klingon is now getting, like, top five hype. Who do you think has the better pro future there? We talked about Edey more, I feel like, last pod. But right now, just like, Klingon hype is like really rising. But he can't play that many minutes. Edey, as you mentioned, he's gotten so much better. I'm still skeptical, but like he has gotten a lot better. Who, like right now, who would you take in the NBA moving forward?
It's not close. It's Donovan Clingan. Okay. And I say that as someone who's maybe a little higher on ED than the consensus is, even though Draft Express, ESPN has him like
three.
Is 13 or
14. Oh, ED. Okay, Clingan, they have three. Yeah.
So when I say I'm higher on ED than the consensus, I mean like, well, not ESPN in this sense.
Yeah, okay,
like
okay.
Extra high on him. I think you take ED in the 20s or the 30s and it's fine. Sort of whatever. Clingan's really good. I think if he was on the table for the Bulls at 12, I'd be pretty hyped about getting him. It no longer looks like he is going to be on the table when the Bulls pick, which would be, you know, around 12 or maybe 15, depending on if they make the playoffs. So I think Clingan's really good. I mean, he definitely has a few shortcomings in his game, which I'll talk about those. Like I said, the first thing is just like how many minutes
can he's got to play. Yeah. If you play 20 minutes a game, like
can he play 25 minutes a game in the NBA? And if he can, what's that really worth? So he's only played 30 minutes three times all year. College games are 40 minutes long. He's never played more than 32 minutes. So it's just like, can he stay on the floor?
And an NBA game is so much more just like intensive and like
totally
the stamina like is still. So if you're only playing 20 minutes in college, like how are you going to play 30 out of 48 NBA minutes and like be effective? So yeah, that's definitely a huge. I mean, I'm assuming once you get an NBA team, like they'll put him through the ringer, really work that stat. He doesn't have any like medical issues, does he? That's limiting it. He's just bad conditioning right now.
Apparently, yeah. So that's part of it. Also, he does not have good touch as a scorer. In so many ways, he's like Rudy Gobert.
Gobert was the guy I was thinking of. Like, can he? I mean, if he's Rudy Gobert or like close to it, I mean, that's worth a top five pick. Rudy Gobert is going to be a four-time defensive player of the year winner and a Hall of Famer. Yeah. Like, that's absolutely worth. I mean, in this draft, you could argue it could be worth the number one pick because this draft is apparently awful. I saw Jeff Goodman say that multiple execs have told him it's the worst draft ever. The 2000 draft will probably have something to say about that. But like, I mean, it seems like every day there's like I don't know who's even projected to go number one right now. It was just like all these guys and no one's really separated themselves and Clingan is like rising. And like, if you think that you can get Clingan to play 30 minutes a game in the NBA and beat Rudy Gobert, Do you think he could go first if he dominates in the final four?
No. He's not as athletic as Gobert. Like, Gobert is a really great athlete. I remember Quinn Snyder used to say when he was coaching the Jazz that Gobert was their best perimeter defender on Utah. Well, look at the guys he had in front of him. It was Donovan, who was a total turnstile back then. Conley's never been a good defender. Royce O'Neal was like their wing stopper, and, you know, he was a bit undersized for that role, but Gobert is just like a really great athlete for someone that size. Clingan is not especially athletic, but I mean, the length is just able to make up for so many other shortcomings. So I was going to say like shooting touch around the rim, pretty bad. He does not shoot three pointers at all. And I don't think that will ever be part of his game. And then you have like, how many minutes can he play? Where he is really good at is playmaking. And I think that that's something where like,
he's some really nice passes against Illinois.
There's some really nice passes. He's very good in dribble handoffs. He knows how to like explode in short areas. So yeah, I like Clingan in general.
R.I.P. Coleman Hawkins. He got put in the rim multiple times.
Yeah, that was. I thought Ty Rogers was the real culprit there. Like, they were putting Clingan on Ty.
Oh Rogers, yeah,
not a threat to shoot at all. And
that was brutal.
It's the game. Also, it's going to be nice to see Stephon Castle from UConn, their guard. He's really, really good. He reminds me of like a Marcus Smart, Drew Holiday type.
Shut down Terrence Shannon.
Very solid at everything besides for shooting threes. He put up a great defensive performance against Terrence Shannon, although I think Clingan had something to do with that too at the rim. So I'm excited to see him in the Final Four. And then, you know, we'll have Bama, we'll have NC State and DJ Burns. I got to start, thinking of some good story ideas here because I'm excited to go down there. So, is this the worst draft I've ever covered? I've been covering the draft since 2014. This is the worst draft I've covered. That's been a decade.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to sit here and say it's the worst draft of all time. I do think that there's some intriguing players in this draft, but they're kind of flawed. And when we talk about the quality of the draft, usually we talk about like, is there a number one overall pick so good that not even the world's dumbest GM could fuck it up? And that's certainly not the case this year. It's very likely the person who goes first will not be the best player this year, which like last year you had Wemby. Anyone would have taken Wemby. No one would have been able to screw that up. This year, it's most likely going to get screwed up. But I actually think the Bulls are in a decent spot at 12 if they end up not making the playoffs, or 15, I believe they will be, if they do make the playoffs. Because there are, like, I think it sort of like drops off right around 15, in my opinion. And someone will probably drop to them. And, you know, that's really the Bulls' only hope for long-term
success. Given the Bulls' three-point shooting woes, I think they might just need to take Dalton Knecht after seeing him light it up against Purdue. I know they fell apart, but the Bulls just need like a lights out shooter who just fucking shoots the hell out of the ball. I don't know how good he's going to be in the NBA, but like, just give me a guy who could just light it up. And they need more guys. Obviously, Kobe has done it inconsistently, but I just want someone who could just really shoot the shit out of the ball.
Doug McDermott too, electric boogaloo. And this time you don't have to trade up for him. So yeah. That's kind of at least. But Tyler Smith would be another guy. If you want a shooter, I prefer Tyler Smith over Dalton Knecht. I'm not the biggest Knecht guy. I think he's like the worst defender ever. And he's also his fifth year in college.
Yeah, I know he's older. Yeah, I know, like I said, I'm not a big draft guy, but I know he can shoot. He put up big numbers on a good Tennessee team, and he had a huge game against Purdue and kind of was a ED versus Knecht kind of showdown there. But we'll see.
Well, you know, they're going to have some options. The Bulls will have some options. And what I was thinking, too, and we'll end the podcast on this.
Yes.
You know, just look at the MVP candidates right now. Giannis was taken around where the Bulls are going to pick. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was taken around where the Bulls
could have taken Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
They took Wendell Carter instead, yeah. You know, Jokic was in the second round. So, of course, like, everyone wants to pick high in the draft, but, like, you know, I remember when we were thinking about tanking a few years ago, like Jalen Suggs was someone people were talking about. Like, he's a good role player. He's not a franchise-changing guy.
Elite defender. Good, nice player.
You know, he's good for your fourth best player. Maybe your third best player. Maybe your third best player on a great team. We'll see. But in general, I don't think that it's, especially in this draft, like picking 12, that's fine.
It's fine. I think
it's fine. Like, draft the best available player. Don't draft for fit. Draft for upside, because really the Bulls' only hope is to hit on a draft.
They need someone to hit.
Not done. Really terrible in the draft. But Io's now shooting 40% from three, so maybe that's something. I don't know. Io's defense and his rebounding is just still a little hit or miss in so many ways. So that's kind of where the Bulls are at, big picture, Jace. It's not that exciting. It's a huge bummer. There's better basketball going on elsewhere. But you know what? It's like, if you have a kid who sucks, you're probably still going to love your kid. No, and that's like what the Bulls are to us. They're our family member who we just can't quit, even though we should have quit them a long time ago. And I think Mark Kay quit the Bulls this week. Is that correct?
He did. I did want to give him a shout out, so I'm glad that you are bringing it up. He
walked away from Bulls fandom, just Bulls content creation, whatever it is. So shout out to Mark. Salute an internet legend, Mark Kay in Australia. You know, one of the true cool guys of the internet, because he pissed off so many people. And he was in it for the right reasons of making people mad. And, you know, spent a lot of time and energy delving into a really pathetic franchise.
And it's especially tough given, I mean, he's from Australia. I mean, the time differences, it's crazy. Just like the effort he put in to cover the Bulls for all this time. And they had the Bulls HQ pod with Will, and they did the CHGO thing the last couple of years. Got to meet Mark when he came in town. I think that was last year, something like that. That was great. So yeah, he just had another kid. So congrats to him, and congrats to him on this decision to walk away from Chicago Bulls content creation. I hope that's a burden off his chest. We love him. We're gonna miss him. But congrats to him. And I said, I hope everything goes well with them, and we'll miss him. But yeah. All right, that's going to do it for us here on this episode of Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. As always, shout out to the Blue Wire Network. As we come down to the stretch of the regular season, we got the play-in tournaments like a couple weeks away now, and the playoffs start after that, obviously. Tons of great NBA podcast stuff all across Blue Wire and other podcasts as well. For us here at Cash, please rate and review us. Give us those 5-star ratings wherever you listen to your pods. You can find us basically anywhere, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all those good places. You can follow us on Twitter or X or whatever you call it. I'm at Bulls_J. Ricky at @SBN_Ricky. And of course, Ricky had mentioned all the great pieces he's written and that you can go check out over at SBNation.com. And please check out ClutchPoints.com as well. Looking ahead real quick here, Again, Bulls don't play again until Friday against the Knicks. We got six games left. I think they play, it was in Orlando after that. And then I think the Knicks again. Then they have like a double back-to-back against the Pistons and Wizards. I can't remember which way that is. And then they close the season at the Garden in New York, like Sunday the 14th or whatever the hell it is. So six games left. We're almost done. I will say Joel Embiid is back tonight after all the troll jobs they did with him coming back. Joel Embiid is returning to the Sixers tonight. Again, the Bulls aren't really in a position to catch the Sixers at this point. It's obviously just not going to happen, but possibly meaningful for the play-in tournament for the Bulls. If they did meet the Sixers in a possible win and go home game, I assume if Joel Embiid is healthy, the Sixers will either get out of the play-in or they will win their first play-in game. But just in case, it would be quite funny if the Bulls played a Joel Embiid Sixers team in a win and go home setting, and they'd probably get their fucking ass beat. Anyways, that's going to do it for us here on this episode. We will talk to you guys next time.